Hello, my name is Chip Ling, and you are listening to Total EM. The entire month of October is dedicated to ultrasound. And when we talk about ultrasound, we're talking about point-of-care ultrasound, or POCUS. No, not Hocus Pocus, even though October is often associated with Halloween. We are talking about point-of-care ultrasound. And the reason why I wanted to focus on this is because we're doing this in conjunction with Practical POCUS, which has upcoming courses at the end of the year. And for those of you listening, you can get a special discount using Total EM when you check out after you register for your course with Practical POCUS. You can get 10% off of the actual course registration. This is something that is special to those who are listening and read the blog for Total EM. So make sure to check it out. It's also on the blog site if you need to know exactly how it is, but it's TOTALEM. And put that in there as you're checking out. That way you can get that discount. But I'm not here to talk to you all about that, because that's something that, like I said, you can go to, you can check it out, see if this is a course for you. I highly would suggest it, because it is great 2 days, quick, rapid stuff, will be very helpful. But let's focus on something else. Let's focus on what actually brings you here, and that is to POCUS or not to POCUS. When people come in with renal colic and flank pain, should you use the ultrasound to assess these patients? I'm a fan of this. I like doing ultrasound, and I love looking at different things with it. I think it can be extremely helpful. But we have to keep in mind that there are limitations with the evidence. Recently, it was actually a couple of years ago, the American College of Emergency Physicians, or ACEP, put out a recommendation with the Choosing Wisely campaign about reducing the number of CTs that you perform with patients with flank pain and renal colic. Basically, not every single time a patient comes in do you need to CT them just to see the stone that you knew was probably there. But here's the question. Do you do any imaging at all? Right now, there's still pretty good pressure to go ahead and do imaging. But do you need to do a CT? Is a KUB helpful? Are all these older tests helpful? Most of the time, not. The CT, of course, is, but the CT has a lot of radiation. So what's a good alternative that doesn't have radiation? Something that you can use at the bedside to assess someone and within minutes can make the diagnosis. Well, our lovely friend ultrasound can do that. And we can do this safely, but we need to understand little caveats behind it. No matter what, just like the Choosing Wisely campaign with ACEP recommends, is that you can avoid CT in young, otherwise healthy patients less than 50 years old with a history of known kidney stones. And I believe that's an important part. You need to know that they've had kidney stones in the past. We have symptoms consistent with renal colic where there doesn't appear to be any complications with it, for example, like fever. However, you still need to ensure follow-up with the primary care and or urology. And I think that's a very, very important point. Kevin Clower, around the same time, also talked about some stuff, and he's been on the podcast before, and he's talking about the evidence about it, basically of CT versus ultrasound. And there has been a good track series of good, solid evidence for this. However, with the recent systematic review and meta-analysis, which we'll dive into a little more here in a few minutes, maybe it's not always as strong as we think. And there are lots of different factors that come into play. And like I said, we'll discuss that more in a second. But let's talk about some of the things about what you're actually looking at here. And of course, since we're talking about ultrasound, there are going to be images. And I can't really show you images very well over a podcast. Now, if I had video with it, like if Tyler Christofoli hooked me up here, because I know he's listening to this, maybe he can teach me a little bit better about how to do the video site. But for now, I'm going to talk to you about the images and kind of how we're going to do this, but I do want you to go to the website to check it out more, and then we're going to have some great links to some other places for you to look at as well. Let's start out first with what we're actually going to be looking at. So a lot of times we're going to be looking at the flanks and in the suprapubic region. So like you do the EFAS exam, if you've done that before, you're going to look at the kidneys, you're going to look at the bladder. Basic images, the same areas we're going to look at. And what we're trying to see is basically, is there evidence of hydronephrosis? Can we visualize a stone? And can we see hydroureter? Those are the three main things. With the hydronephrosis, there are gradings. So there's mild, moderate, and severe. I like to think of it that way. They have other gradings where there's 0 through 5 and stuff like that. Really, when it comes down to it, and like the paper that we're talking about today goes through, you're looking at mild, moderate, severe. So let's keep it really simple. And if you're asking yourself, well, what is mild, moderate, severe? It's actually a little easier than you might think. So when we're talking about mild hydronephrosis, there's some fluid in the renal pelvis, but there's little to no involvement of the actual calyces. Moderate hydronephrosis, now that has fluid in the renal pelvis, but extends into the calyces. And then severe hydronephrosis has a lot of involvement with the renal pelvis and the calyces, but also has thinning of the renal parenchyma. And usually this is pretty damn obvious once you actually see it. If you want, like I said, you can check out the images to see it more. And all the images for today's podcast comes from the POCUS Atlas. It's a free resource, and they actually encourage you to share these images too. But I highly recommend taking a look at them as well, because you can get even more examples than what we put on the website, and they update pretty frequently. Okay, so in one of the examples, and you'll see this on the website too, they have an example of moderate hydronephrosis where you can actually also visualize a stone. It's about a 7 millimeter stone in size, and it very well entails what we're looking for at the UPJ, the uteropelvic junction. If you happen to see that, great. Bonus points. Now you can see the stone in addition to the hydronephrosis, and diagnosis is clinched. Bam, simple as that. You can scan through, and sometimes you'll get lucky. You may be able to follow the hydroureter that you see and scan it all the way down until you catch a stone. That sometimes happens, and I've got an image of that as well. But you probably won't be able to see that. And maybe you see a little hydronephrosis. So you go to the bladder, and you're going to check a couple of things there. Is there a stone right next to it at the UVJ? That's the urovesicular junction. And when you see it at the UVJ, you're actually going to check for, is there a stone there that you can obviously see? And usually what you're going to end up seeing is a twinkle artifact. You may see the acoustic shadowing like you would see a stone anywhere else, but sometimes what you may see is just some color to it. And there's not a good explanation as to why this happens, but you'll see a lot of color flow through there. Sometimes it's more obvious than others. I put purposely a more subtle example on the website because you're sometimes going to see that mix of that stone or what you think may be a stone and that twinkle artifact with it. You see that, again, this is a great example of that diagnosis that you can then make. What about what's called the ureteral jets? Well, if you can switch the color like you would have been already because you're trying to look for that twinkle artifact, if you can see basically shots of color, it looks like a jet coming out, then that tells you that it's probably not obstructing. And that can be very reassuring that, hey, this is not a completely obstructing stone. If you don't see it, again, this can help confirm that, hey, there's a good chance of this being an obstructing stone, but this can take a long time to actually observe. And I've had patients who I know didn't have an obstructing stone where I looked at it still just trying to see, and it can take a long time, or you may not just be able to visualize it at all either. So don't take the negative, again, as a confirmation of no movement because you may not be able to detect it. So what about, okay, I see some hydronephrosis, or maybe I see a little bit, but nothing really convincing. Well, this is where you have to be careful because there can be other things that imitate renal colic that aren't actually renal colic. And there's a whole list of stuff. But the big ones we think about are the ruptured abdominal aortic aneurysm, or AAA, or an aortic dissection. But think about all these others. So pyelonephritis, although again, you're going to kind of see the hydronephrosis there, but this can be easily missed or confused, a renal infarction, pneumonia, appendicitis, diverticulitis, bowel ischemia, bowel perforation, ovarian torsion, all these other things can all imitate this. And these are big diagnoses. You don't want to miss them. Like I said, the big ones we worry about, the ones that you hear most about are the ruptured AAA and the aortic dissection. So as a quick thing you can do, just look at the aorta. You know, a lot of times you can get a quick little scan through the aorta and just help confirm that, okay, this isn't going on with it. I would especially do this in patients where you are less certain about the diagnosis. And these are patients that, you know, especially if they're on the older end of the spectrum, they don't have a previously diagnosed stone, or they may have had no recent evaluation of their aorta. Most likely, out of those three populations, it's probably because I'm going to look at it because they haven't recently had an evaluation of their aorta, but they are otherwise low risk. The reason why I say that is because even with the Choosing Wisely campaign, okay, they wanted older patients and they wanted those who have not been previously diagnosed with a stone to be evaluated with CT. And I, in general, agree with that. I'd be a little more on the cautious side, unless maybe there's just an absolute textbook example. But again, be careful with this. So let's go around and let's talk about the actual paper now that we've talked about kind of the basics of looking for stones and looking for hydronephrosis and hydroureter. Well, there was an academic emergency medicine, a paper by Wong et al., which is the accuracy and prognostic value of point-of-care ultrasound for nephrolithiasis in the emergency department, a systematic review and meta-analysis. And then there was a systematic review snapshot by the Annals of Emergency Medicine, which also kind of broke down this paper. The actual meta-analysis side is a little limited, but what we do see from this is that of the five studies that they actually included for the diagnostic accuracy when they compared it to CT, was about anywhere from 35.5% to 84.2%. That is really low. That is a lot lower than I was expecting. But again, these have a whole variety of people who are doing it. So people who have limited experience or knowledge, which can obviously play a role there as well, or those who just are in general, maybe not understanding as well how to look for things. So all that could play a role there. But in general, I mean, if you really know what you're looking for and you can examine it well, I don't really see that being the issue. So I'm a little confused with why there were lower numbers here than we see with other stuff. But again, I want to talk about this because maybe this is a little more realistic than the everyday person. You know, if they are that, they're the regular person who picks up the ultrasound versus someone who's a true aficionado. Maybe that's the difference there. So the overall sensitivity was 70.2% and the specificity was 75.4% in that 1,773 patients included. Okay, so it's not bad, but it's not great. The likelihood ratios there are just not enough to really clinch that diagnosis. However, of the two studies where they did the degree of hydronephrosis, and I think this is the one that is worth paying more attention to, it had just a little over 1,500 patients in that part of the analysis. Those with moderate or severe hydronephrosis, now that sensitivity was only at 29%, but the specificity, 94.4%. So about 95% of these patients had a stone. And in most cases, these stones were larger than 5 millimeters. All right, this is a lot more helpful. So the big stones we worry about because they have bigger issues with them. And the stones that are causing more issues with hydronephrosis, hey, that's pretty helpful. And the likelihood ratio is a little over 5 at 5.22. The negative likelihood ratio is 0.76. So, okay, not really super helpful. So long story short, what I take from this, if you have a patient with renal colic, they have a history of stones, it sounds like they're stone, lab work probably shows like hematuria and stuff like that. And maybe they have some changes in their kidney function, nothing disastrous, but maybe something just a little off with it. All these things together are highly suggestive of a kidney stone that is in transit and causing these issues. Okay, well, in that case, I'd say, all right, let's go with this diagnosis as long as we can rule out the other things. Like I said, maybe worth looking at the aorta, double checking other stuff as well if you have any concerns there. So for me, with this evidence, my big takeaway is, yes, a positive is super helpful, but a negative, maybe not so much. And that is the takeaway I'd say for those of you who are practicing this more, who aren't the experts in doing this exam, who maybe aren't usually catching the stones that go with it, or anyone who has any kind of doubt with the diagnosis, okay, maybe go ahead and do the CT scan or something else to help confirm what's going on. But in your patients where you've got hydronephrosis, hydroureter especially if you see a stone, those are the patients where, yes, we can make that diagnosis a lot more easily. But when it's just hydronephrosis that we're trying to base it on, probably not as helpful, and we need to think about the big picture overall. This is, again, simple review, something I wanted to talk about because there was recent discussion on it, and I feel like this paper didn't get as much credit due as some of the others in the past because it didn't have the nice high sensitivities and specificities we've seen in other papers. But I think that's the thing we need to take away from this, is because maybe we're not always as good as we'd like to think, and we can't always do the perfect study, but maybe we need to do the truly pragmatic study, like what is probably going on here. I would love your comments, though. I'd love the people who have read this study in detail, or people who just have their own experiences with this. What do you think? Do you use negatives still, or are you like me and probably stick more with the positives for your actual exams versus negatives to change and influence your diagnosis in most cases? But until next time, continue to provide total care